from WNYC New York Public Radio. This is the podcast of The Leonard Lopate Show. This is just one segment of the program. You can hear all Leonard's interviews on demand at WNYC.org. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
Don't let it decide, baby, diamond ring. If that diamond ring don't shine, he gonna take it to a private eye. If that private eye can't see, he better not take the ring from me.
I'm Leonard Lopate. Welcome to my show. You may not recognize the name Ellis McDaniels, but you surely recognize his trademark rhythm and the unique sound of his guitar fill on this, his most famous recording. They may be the most copied sounds in rock history. You know him, of course, as Bo Diddley, and over the course of his illustrious career, he has been given a Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award, been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and been given a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Bo Diddley is appearing with special guest Nellie McKay at 8 p.m. this Saturday night. That's tomorrow night, the 16th of July, at the Long Island Summer Festival at the Planting Fields Arboretum in Oyster Bay. And I am delighted to welcome Bo Diddley to my show today. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well. You're what, 76 now?
Yes.
How old were you when you began playing music?
20. Oh, well, when I first started, well, see, I started off playing the violin at 8 years old. I have 12 years of classical music that most people don't know about. And then I picked up the guitar. My mother went crazy, you know.
because the guitar was associated with the blues at that time.
Yeah, and she was like a Sunday school teacher, and she did not connect with me playing the guitar. You know, it's like one of them things, don't bring that thing in this house, boy.
Well, at that time, your mother's a Baptist, I imagine.
Right, right.
And at that time, even in gospel music, the guitar was not allowed. That was something that came in later in the 50s.
Well, the old quartet singers, when I was a kid, they had a guitar that would lead them off is to put them in the right key, and that was all it. And the only other people that were going with blues and like Muddy Waters and Jimmy Reed and John Lee Hooker and people like that. And I tried to play like Muddy Waters, and it didn't work. So I had to go develop my own thing, and that's what got me here today.
Well, Muddy Waters comes from Mississippi. You come from Mississippi, the Delta. Did you know him back there when he was just McKinley Morganfield?
No, I only met Muddy in Chicago, where I was raised at.
So how young were you when you were moved to Chicago?
I think I had to be about 8 years old.
So you didn't really... How aware were you of the Mississippi Delta style when you moved to Chicago?
No, I didn't have what you call the Mississippi Delta style.
You were listening to the stuff on the radio.
Yeah, there you go.
And what about the classical music? Do you ever listen to it anymore?
Oh, yeah, I got something going on that I'm planning on starting back looking to record very shortly, and by Christmas, I think. At least that's what I got of a band to do. You know, I just decided not to do anything with any record companies because there's a lot of they're thieves. I mean, I'm just I got to tell you the way it is. I got robbed. You know,
well, you didn't get any royalties
from all of
these big hits.
I don't even know what a royalty check looked like.
Even when other people recorded your songs?
No. You're looking at should be a multimillionaire.
Absolutely.
Two or three times. And it's just our judicial system does not help an artist like myself or any other cat, you know, of going after people that you know that owes you money. Well, and that's what else you're going to do with it?
Well, you recorded for Chess and Checker, which were the big that was the big blues label in in Chicago, Leonard Chess. And he did he pay other people? He had Chuck Berry, he had Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf, Walter.
I have to tell you something right now. Refrain from asking me about somebody else because I don't talk about other people. Only Bo Diddley.
But do you know how could he get away with not paying you?
Well, I don't know, man. All I know is somebody got the money, but it didn't come to my mailbox. The way I survived is for what I do on one-nighters. You know, like I'm working here this to Saturday, and for records, I feel like my fans has been hoodwinked, I call it, in other words, ripped off, because they bought the records because of the love for me. And it's a thing that we buy your records and, wow, you know, we love you. And they buying the original. Now you got bootleg guys coming up. And the system does not fight for you as to catch these guys doing this against us as artists like Napster. Napster was doing all this. And copying people, whatever, downloading and all that. This is against the copyright laws. And they let them, they give them, what, give them a few months, a few years to get rid of it? No, stop it now.
But your problems go way back before the invention of the computer. And how could they get away with not paying you royalties? Didn't you say, where's my money? I have a manager?
Well, we had a group called the King Snakes. Out of, I think, Houston, Texas, or Dallas, somewhere back there, that did a record called Where's Bo Diddley's Money? You know what I'm saying?
And what did the courts say?
I ain't been to no court. It's a thing. Well, I don't have enough time here to explain to you about the way that this. I've been in the business 50 years, and I finally figured out how all of it works, you know. And if a guy gets away from you and don't pay you for a certain length of time, you go in the law book somewhere and there's some kind of statute in there that you run into.
The statute of limitations.
See, that is for a thug. That is for a thug. You know, they when the law was made up in the state, whoever is at the head of it had to have some hand in saying, okay, if we could scam you so many people for this length of time and stay out the way, we got something that they can't get nothing from. So some other lawyer say, oh, this is great. Let's do it. You know, that's the way I put it. It don't have to be like that. But something went down that causes cats like me to be still working because I should be working if I feel like it. Uh-uh. No, I got to work. Yeah, you know what I mean? And I feel good. I've been blessed. I'm 76. I don't know what a 76-year-old dude's supposed to feel like. But
you look good.
Yeah, I feel good. You know, I'm belong here to New York because this is who put me on the map. You know, New York City, the Apollo Theater in 1955. And I said, I'm not going on the stage to show off a suit. I'm going to perform. And that's what I've been doing all these years, and I'm still doing it.
When you were you played the Apollo the first time. It was already a legendary theater, so you must have felt like this was a great moment your life.
Yeah, because I never thought that I would be in this position, you know, as a performer. You know, I don't call myself a guitar player. I'm a performer, an actor, or something, because I do things with the guitar that most cats don't do, you know, and I got my own thing. So I'm different, you know, and I specialize in just trying to make people happy.
And your guitar sound, you got a certain kind of a guitar sound that I thought you could only get with a wah-wah pedal, but was way before there was a wah-wah pedal.
That's right.
Is that because you pretty much invented your own guitars? You started playing those square guitars.
Yeah, well, I designed that guitar in 1958, and Gretsch makes it. Now, Fred Gretsch is took over the patent, and he's working. And
they're making
my guitars now, you know, and they're beautiful.
And they're paying you a royalty on that, I hope.
Yeah.
Oh, well, at least somebody's paying you.
Well, Gretchen's all right. But like I said, I don't have enough time to explain to you the injustice that I have faced dealing with royalties and stuff like that. You know, I don't want to call no names because they got something like a gag order. That if you say something to somebody, you got a lawyer on your tail right quick, you know.
Well, let's go back to how you wound up developing this style. You're growing up in Chicago.
Yeah.
And a lot of bluesmen came up from the South and were living in Chicago at the time, developing an electrified sound. And that's what you were listening to when you were a kid?
I used to sneak and listen to it. You know, you didn't turn this stuff on when my mother was in the house. That was a no-no. Yeah. And I built my first electric guitar.
You built your own one,
yeah,
your own guitar.
I built it, you know. And I took a Victrola needle and hooked it to the tailpiece. And I found out that the vibration went through that needle, ended out of a speaker in the back of a radio, and I found the output tube that went through it, and I hooked the wires to the tube. Well, the first time I did it, I blew all the fuses in the house, you know. And the people in the building, they weren't too happy. And they made me, I lived in this big old building that had a basement with big rats in the bottom. And, you know, so they made me go through the window down in there where all the, and put a fuse in. And the fuse looked like, big old fuse looked like a peppermint stick, you know. And I had to put one in to put the lights back on in the house. And I used to get all kind of cussing out because I was always hooking something up, blowing something, you know.
On the other hand, it sounds to me like you could have gone into electronics.
But I came out of it. And, I never got hurt, never hurt nobody. And I'm all right.
But you also developed a sound that was not like what other people were doing. Was that there from the start, or is that something that you came to?
No, I'll tell you how I got that beat. I was trying to play Gene Autry's "I Got Spurs That Jingle, Jangle, Jingle." There's one note different in that from Bo Diddley. Bubba, da, bubba, da, bubba, da, bubba, bubba, you know, and I did that. And there's one more note. And I said, "Oh wow! Oh wait a minute, let me do that again." And I did boom, the chicka 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 chick. And I said, "I gotta get me a drummer and let him do that because it sounded primitive, like
sounds almost New Orleans rather than Chicago.
Sounded primitive, African rhythm and stuff. And I've always been a lover of Tahitian and island type music, like Honolulu." All that stuff, you know, because I figured out that maybe my mother would let me do something like that, but not you know. So I laid on trying to do this, and I got this drummer, Clifton James, and showed him how to do this. So it was Clifton James, and I had a bass man called him Cornbread and Jerome, and we were called the Langley Avenue Jive Cats, and then we got tired of that name, and I changed it to the Hipsters. And
were you calling yourself Bo Diddley then?
No, I only started that when I went to Chess Records, and we was in there. So I started off with a song that. We used to do in the black neighborhood called Signify. Today they call it rap, you know. And you only did stuff like this when you weren't nowhere around your mama or daddy. You know what I mean?
Sometimes you said your mama.
You know how kids are. You know, hey, mama ain't here, so I can say it. You know what I'm saying? So I did that too. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going to lie and say that I wasn't a bad kid, but I was naughty, you know. I admit that I did some things that really screwed people up, you know, but never to hurt anybody. I wasn't into that, you know. Like, I'd do things like bouncing a ball on the streets and let it go in some little old lady's flower bin just to hear her fuss, you know. And I'd climb it over there to get it out, get the ball out of her flowers, you know, just to aggravate her. Stuff like this, because I didn't see any reason for her to be upset because I was a child playing in front of her house. And it led on up to led on up. And then when I did this thing with Chess Records, she looked at me, this lady who used to live next door to me, she says, "You're never going to amount to anything." Looked at her. And then heard my mother used to have, I think they had seminars on me, you know. My mother would say things like, "Why don't you get a job, boy?" You know, I said, when I played the song and I came home, I said, "Mama, I made a record." And she said, "You did what?" I said, "I made a record." And I sat up all night. I was 26 years old then. Waiting the house, so she still wasn't too happy about me and the guitar, you know. And she says to me, "Well, who's going to pay you for playing that thing?" You know, I said, "Well, I made a record. I'm going to make some money." She said, "How much you going to make?" I said, "I don't know, you know." But at that time, records were only like 2 cents a record, a penny or something like that. You talk about 1955. And I sat up all night looking at the contract, trying to figure out how was I going to make any money off a penny. You know, I said 2 cents.
Yeah, 2 cents to the artist, know, and two more and to the guy who wrote the song.
What people do not understand that 2 cents was a lot of money. A lot of money, but nobody understood it because it said penny. You know what I'm saying? And I sat up all night looking at the contract because me and Howlin' Wolf was supposed to go to New Orleans to play at a club called the Shalimar Ballroom. First time out of Chicago, you know, since I moved there. And this is something, you know, that a lot of entertainers don't have to go through today. You know, we left home with, I think, just enough money. I think gas was 25 cents a gallon. Now, this is 1955. Gas was 25, 29 cents a gallon, you know. And I had the entertainers today that might be listening, you know, to how I survived all of this. I've been through just about every downfall that could ever be. I'd have lived through the acid rock with Jimi Hendrix and Grateful Dead and all them people, you know, with the LSD mess. Now we're dealing with some more crap. You know what I'm saying? I'm still here. Never got involved in any of it.
We'll come back and we'll find out what your mother thought after you did become famous and have a hit and more. My guest is Bo Diddley, the great Bo Diddley, who will be performing tomorrow night at the Long Island Summer Festival at the Planting Fields Arboretum in Oyster Bay, along with Nellie McKay. That's at 8 o'clock, and tickets can be ordered through Ticketmaster.com or by calling 631-888-9000. Stay with us.
47 miles of barbed wire. I use a cobra snake for a necktie. I got a brand new house on the roadside made from rattlesnake hide. I got a brand new chimney made on top, made out of a human skull. Now come on, take a little walk with me, Arlene, and tell me, who do you love? Who do you love? Who do you love? Graveyard mine, just 22 and I don't mind dying. Who do you love? Who do you love? Who do you love?
when I was a little boy, at the age of 5, I had something in my pocket, keep a lot of folks alive. Now I'm a man, made 21. You know, baby, we can have a lot of fun. I'm a man, I spell M.
Bo Diddley's I'm a Man, a song that's probably been recorded as much as any song in the history of rock and roll by every group that ever decided that it wanted to play the blues. But Bo Diddley says he didn't get any of the royalties for any of those records. Meanwhile, he does perform all over the place, and he will be performing in Long Island in, at the Planting Fields Arboretum in Oyster Bay as part of the Long Island Summer Festival with Nellie McKay. That's 8 p.m. tomorrow night. And did it shock you when you heard all the records of that song that have been recorded over the years?
Yeah, well, that's the, I hate to say it, but it's the truth. It's still the American ripoff. That's what I call it, the American ripoff, because, you know, you go get an attorney, and if you ain't careful, you'll get one that's protecting the guy that ripped you off. You know what I'm saying? And these people are smart enough to try to have all the attorneys they can afford with your money. You know what I'm saying? And and the way I look at this is I feel like the government, there's a way for me to be compensated for what's out there that belonged to me. But I need help. See, the government need to get in. When I file a claim on somebody that's, it has to be filed with the government. Somebody from the government come show us the whatever papers has got to come on Mr. Diddley. How did you get paid for this and blah, blah, blah. And that. So when they go to court, the judge can only say one thing. Did you pay the man? Okay. Why I got to go through 5 years? That's unacceptable. See, the judge asking, first of all, the judge say, don't lie. If we find that you're lying, bring your checkbook. You know what I'm saying?
You're good. It's perjury.
That's it. You know what I'm saying? So now, did you pay the man? That's all need to be said. You know? And then, because see, if a guy ripped you off, to me, he didn't pay no taxes on that money yet. That's free money in his pocket.
Right.
You did. He paid taxes on that was supposed to be his. But your part that he stole, that's gravy and rice and gravy and everything is and all in his pocket by itself. You know what I'm saying? See, and I got a lot of people say, oh, you can't do that. What do you mean you can't do that? I worked and did all of this, recorded, I'm a product. So it was marketable. So the guys, what they did, they said, you ain't saying nothing, I ain't gonna wake you up. I ain't never been asleep. You know, I've been sitting waiting, trusting. And I thank God I did enough shows, and what I call shows made people want to come back and see what I was doing again. If I had been a bad artist and one of those were just for dollar bills, I don't think I'd be here now.
My guest is Bo Diddley, and he is performing in Long Island tomorrow night at the Planting Fields Arboretum in Oyster Bay. This is WNYC, 93.9 AM 820. We're online at WNYC.org. You were telling the story about how your mother didn't really think you'd make a living from all of this. What happened when some of your records started taking off and Bo Diddley became a monster hit? Did she finally think, it was all right?
No, let me tell you something. Now, I lost my mother, and before she passed away, she called me to her bedside, and she said, since you're going to play this mess, That's what she called it. Bess, try to be the best. And promise me that you'll never become a drunk. Because drugs weren't really around then. It was just everybody was getting drunk, you know, that cheap wine and all that kind of stuff. So I told her, I said, you ain't got that to worry about. You know, and in a couple of days, we lost her. She was gone. I mean, I haven't, out of 50 years I've been in this business, I don't fool with no drugs, never have. You know, I don't need it. You know, and I don't understand what's wrong with all these fools out here now, you know, that's doing this mess.
You have been called the originator. I don't know who gave you that label.
I am.
But there are so many people who've been given that kind of credit, whether it's Chuck Berry or Cecil Gant or Elvis. Does it upset you that somebody like Elvis, who came along much later than you, is often credited with being the father of rock and roll?
Do you want me to tell you what that's all about?
Sure.
We were dealing with this black and white thing during that year, during that time. And Ed Sullivan, me and Elvis was on Ed Sullivan. And it first started then. But we were dealing with black dudes couldn't get away with what white dudes was doing. And my white brothers were playing stuff. And they could, you know, it's something called, I'm going to pay you, but I'm going to do this for you. And I see, I did something when I was on Ed Sullivan's show. And I've never told too many people about it, but I think I'm going to tell you about it now, because it shocked the daylights out of me. I didn't know I thought maybe that what I'm fixing to say was the way that things was. No. I was a black man. And something, whoever was running everything, had a problem in the head. You know what I'm saying? And I play for millions of people, and I don't see color. I see people. You know, I've always been that way. But I played the Ed Sullivan show, and they gave me $750. And it went back under the table, back to somebody, I don't know who. And they paid Elvis $50, you know, $5,000. Now tell me that ain't something wrong with that. You know what I'm saying? And I was the first. I was the beginning. And it was in a bunch of papers back in. Cashbox had it. If you remember Cashbox, I had an award from Cashbox.
That was a trade publication like Billboard.
Right, right, right. That came before Billboard. Okay, I share the beginning of rock and roll with Chuck Berry, because he and I were the first two. Yeah, I was a few months ahead of him, but we were the beginning. Alan Freed is the one that came up with the originator. The late, great Alan Freed.
New York's came top up, disc jockey at the time.
Right. And the only other person that was really doing anything for artists like myself then was Porky Chadwick out of Pennsylvania and out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I broke big at a place called the White Elephant in Pittsburgh. All right. Now, then Chuck Berry came right behind me, and that started what we call rock and roll the rolling. And everybody started jumping on the bandwagon. Elvis was great. Elvis, I loved what he was doing. But at that time, almost like going into the Hall of Fame, I had gotten really upset about something that happened during that time. And a lot of people told me, said, don't do it, don't do it. Because I got so angry, I started to send them that statue back, you know.
Really? Because you are an outspoken man.
Yeah, because I was the dude that they called to ask where to put the Hall of Fame at. I am the one that they talked to for 45, almost 45 minutes to an hour. And I said, Cleveland, Ohio. Because that's actually where rock and roll actually started its roots, because there was a club there called Spatz's Show Bar. And I was the first thing to go. Nobody else wanted to be bothered with, what, Bo Diddley, what's that? Who is that? You know, what's he doing? And this man took a chance, went to the radio station, played it the night the club was packed. And from there on to New York.
Alan Freed started in Cleveland, then came to New York.
That's right.
And he, of course...
a lot of people don't know this, you know, but I ain't dead yet.
Well, and that's for sure. And people will have a chance to see just how alive you are. Nellie McKay, is she somebody you performed a lot with?
No. I'll tell you the truth, I might know if I see her, but a lot of us don't know each other by name.
Yeah,
you
but
know,
meanwhile...
I just know people, you know.
She'll be opening for you tomorrow night at the... Long Island Summer Festival at the Planting Fields Arboretum in Oyster Bay. And as I said before, tickets can be ordered from Ticketmaster.com or by calling 631-888-9000. And my great thanks to Bo Diddley for being my guest today. It's been a great honor.
Hey, man, I wish I had time enough to talk a little bit more, but I got to get out of here. It looks like it's been the rain outside.
Well, you're invited back the next time you're in town.
Well... I want everybody out there to know that I'm gonna be when I get to show. I'm gonna be the rapping rat.
Well, you've already been 500% more man. Yeah. The Black Gladiator, the Boss Man, the Gunslinger, Big Bad Bo. Why not that as well?
I'm a road runner, honey.
Thanks for checking out today's podcast of The Leonard LoPage Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. This podcast is made possible by WNYC and its listeners. Please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.